This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
A little over a year ago, a group of local farmers just south of Nanaimo formed a partnership called the Farmship Growers Cooperative. Christopher Brown is one of those farmers. He's part of a burgeoning new generation of urban farmers who are reimagining and reinventing farming for a new century. But despite the growing popularity of farmers' markets and continuing concerns about food security on Vancouver Island, there is evidence that only small numbers of shoppers are buying locally produced fresh food. A Victoria-based annual survey called Vital Signs reported this week that 98% of Greater Victoria residents say they recycle, 95% make an effort to conserve energy, and 92.5% try to reduce waste. But only 23% regularly buy food that is produced locally, and 54% say they never do. The survey suggests that access to local food seems to be the biggest barrier. Locally grown food made a top 10 list of the best things about Nanaimo in a similar Vital Signs survey released just yesterday, but no further details or stats were given. We've convened a panel today to discuss issues related to local and urban agriculture. We're joined in the studio by Christopher Brown, a farmer with Farmship Growers Co-op and board member at Bowen Roads Farmers Market, and also by Kelsey Wolf, a Startup Nanaimo co-founder who is also community manager at Nanaimo's Square One Tech Incubator. And we are joined on the phone by Marjorie Stewart, who is board chair at Nanaimo Food Share.
Welcome to People First Radio, all of you. A 2011 report from VICRA, that's the Vancouver Island Community Research Alliance, called Strategies for Increasing Food Security on Vancouver Island, states bluntly that Vancouver Island does not produce enough food to be self-sufficient. Marjorie Stewart, Vancouver Island is hardly alone in this. Why are food security and food sovereignty so important to us?
Well, it's a phenomenon of globalization, Kevin, and it's one of the issues that people around the world are dealing with. And the basic issue that the United Nations have been worrying about for decades is urbanization. We all want to live an urban lifestyle, kind of based on a sort of 1% elitist notion from the past, but we're not prepared to deal with the realities of how to supply that lifestyle. So let me just deal with the topic food security, because it includes the notion of sovereignty, which would be actually ownership of the means to produce food, which is an issue, and the notion of sustainability, which covers being able to continue doing this. And for a lot of people, they haven't yet figured out that if you're going to continue drawing goodness out of the earth to feed yourself with, you're going to have to figure out a sustainable, sensible way of putting back in again. We're dealing with a whole huge global cultural change. We're not alone in this. Our invention of the new agriculture is being discovered all around the world. From the point of view of Nanaimo Food Share, our tagline says it all: local food matters.
Chris Brown, Vancouver Island seems to be particularly vulnerable, in a sense, to food insecurity because we are an island. What drew you to growing food in the first place, and were you somewhat prompted by the need for food security?
Yeah, it came through education. I studied at Vancouver Island University, and I started to become aware of global problems and how the fate of civilizations are tied into agriculture. And through that awareness, I chose to take action in becoming a farmer. And I found that there are many agricultural opportunities because there is so much more land available than farmers farming that land. And so I'm trying to help create a culture of choosing to farm with that land that is available.
And it sounds like you've made the move, or you're helping to propel the move from food security to food sovereignty, ownership of the means of making food.
Yeah, that's right. We're working as a cooperative. We're sharing the responsibilities and the roles and working as a team, so we don't have to take on the duties as individuals only. Farming is a community. It's powered by people. It's a people-powered endeavor. And many, like, you know, we all eat for a living. And so the responsibility of local food security can be shared by the community.
Now, in preparing for today's discussion, I read that urban agriculture is the practice of cultivating, processing, distributing food in or around a village, town, or city, and it can include edible landscaping, community gardening, urban farming. And I've also read online, once again, urban farming takes things a step further, as it includes growing food for wholesale and retail sales to urban consumers. Chris, if we can just continue with our with you, this is what you've been doing with the Farmship Growers Co-op. How does the cooperative farming approach actually work, and how has it been going?
It's going amazingly because the community is coming behind us. They see the movement that we're doing, and people are supporting us because it's a shared project. And so there are some of us on the farm who do this every single day, and that's how we make our living. And then other people are able to come and contribute on a casual basis to learn and see how the farming process is happening and to take a share of the things that we're growing. And something that I'm really impassioned about is helping build a food resilient local economy, because if we are growing more food and we're able to sell that food, then we're going to help develop the local agricultural sector, which will then allow us to create jobs in local agriculture, which will then build this community of local food.
Marjorie Stewart, what are your thoughts about the cooperative approach that Chris and his colleagues are using?
Well, I think it's one of the three fundamental business models. So they're on the right track, and they're sharing some of the duties, as he points out, which takes some of the burden off the individual farmers who want to spend time growing. I'd be interested in hearing Christopher's comments about the input of the Windle family, who actually own the land that they're farming.
One thing that's special about our farm is we are repurposing the land. It was a conventional farm traditionally, growing hay, corn, and potatoes. And now we're transitioning the farm into organic farming. The Windlows are inspired, I believe, to see us doing this because the farm has a new life and there's new purpose coming to it. They're seeing the farm going to continue. It's not going to diminish as into disrepair. It's going to continue to be used and to be valued.
Now, those are what I call real farmers.
Yes, that's the traditional understanding of farming. Marjorie, you mentioned three business models. Briefly, tell us, what are the other two?
Private business and non-profit. Those are the structures. I don't see how you can get around. You can hybridize them as much as you like, but I don't see how you can get around those three structures. Then something else that tends to come in, which is of interest because of the name of your program, People First, is the social motivation behind these structures. So we hear, I would expect your other guest has heard a great deal about CSR, corporate social responsibility, or social enterprise. These are not exactly models. They are goals, and at the moment there's no oversight for them.
Kelsey Wolfe, I pick up on what Marjorie is saying about corporate responsibility, corporate social responsibility. How does that factor in with local food production?
Well, there's been a huge movement towards more corporate socially responsible businesses. Some countries, like in the UK, they've made huge efforts towards actually creating social enterprise as an actual business model, so that it's allowing businesses other structures that will fit their model. And I think the cooperative model for Chris Brown and the Farmship Cooperative is great. I think that other businesses in town can make an effort in kind of hybriding the for-profit and the non-profit. It is combining the two, even if it is a for-profit business, having more of the socially responsible side to the business. Obviously will help in the more sustainability of movements like this. And as all of these global problems keep coming up, it's really, really important that we have the corporate social responsibility a part of every single one of those businesses.
I'd like to support what Kelsey is saying there. It doesn't matter whether it's a private business, preferably an owner-operated entrepreneurial private business, or a non-profit, a cooperative. What matters is what percentage of the goal is social. In other words, people first.
Now, the report from VICRA, which I referred to earlier, states the following, and I'm reading directly from the report. We also know that local food producers may focus on food production, but may have little access to support for entrepreneurial business development. This means that attention must turn to better access to information on operational challenges, marketing advantages that the local food producers have, cooperation in marketing, opportunities for diversification of income, training needs and policy frameworks. Kelsey, I'm wondering, what are your thoughts on the business needs of local and urban farmers? And you could use Chris's operation as an example if you want to, because I think that's how you met him.
Yeah, actually, through Startup Nanaimo, we hosted a pitch contest for people to come and pitch their business with the result of having a marketing prize. And Chris and the Farmship Cooperative won that prize. We had about 100 people in attendance, and it was almost a unanimous vote for his business. He did a great job in presenting, and obviously there's a lot of passionate people that stand behind him with what he does. Even back in 2008 in Victoria, they've revised bylaws to help welcome urbanization or urban farming into their center. And I think that if Nanaimo were to help make more movements towards that, it would help to allow more businesses to move along the same pathways. And it's a huge barrier in being able to do that within the city of Nanaimo. So it's great that we've got the farm on the outskirts, but within the city itself, if the city can allow certain instances and help truly support it through initiatives and bylaws, then that would be great. It'd be a huge movement forward.
Chris, what are your thoughts on the marketing challenges and the business education aspect of this whole thing?
Well, access to food is the biggest challenge. People are accustomed to being able to go to the grocery store and purchase things when they need them. And so right now there's a group of people who in Nanaimo are working towards creating a year-round covered farmers market. And right now the city of Nanaimo is revising its Bevan Park master plan, which includes an area for a farmers market in its agricultural options. However, we're urging the city of Nanaimo to include in the plan a year-round covered farmers market within this area. A farmers market needs to be covered to be year-round, and the market needs to be year-round to provide continuous, locally produced food for our community and to build the agricultural sector in our local economy. Nanaimo could choose to be a Canadian and a global leader in the food security movement by using its civic powers to encourage local urban farming, community farming, and in its park and city plans, food forests and other things like that. For me, as an agricultural entrepreneur, I see so many opportunities because California is starting to go dry, and we need to create solutions as the conventional food system is fossil fuel powered, and local organic food just tastes so much better.
Wendy Stuck wrote the following in the Globe and Mail on June the 3rd, 2013. A Vancouver Island couple is selling their organic vegetable farm near Nanaimo, saying they are worn out from lengthy zoning battles with municipal authorities. Dirk Becker, who grows about 16,000 pounds of vegetables at Compassion Farm in Lanceville each year, said Monday that he and his partner Nicole Shaw made the decision following a dispute that has seen tempers flare on both sides of a debate over commercial farming in an area zoned for residential use. Marjorie Stewart, this land use battle, this particular one, was the highest profile struggle I think we've seen locally here to date about the use of land in urban areas. Tell us more about the challenges that local and urban agriculture face.
Well, the biggest challenge is the clash of values. It's difficult for people to face the amount of change that we need to face in terms of bringing healthy food to our families. And what happened in Becker and Shaw are friends of mine, and they live in the same community that I live in, so I observed the politics of it. And it was really rather weird and led me to look at the history of zoning. And this might help people understand what's been going on here. Nearly 100 years ago, a group of influential planners and architects came up with a notion of the future of the world divided into zones. And one zone would be for peaceful, quiet, country-style residents, suburbia. One zone would be for where you worked, One zone would be for where you went to have recreation or play. And, of course, the fourth zone that was needed was transportation to get around the three zones. As we now know, transportation is becoming a major issue. Energy use is becoming a major issue. Many people want to work where they live. We're not back in Dickensian days when cities were great, horrible, awful, gruesome places. We've got people who would be quite capable of earning a living, market gardening or urban farming within urban boundaries. But unfortunately, we have generation upon generation of people who have been trained to believe that they should live in a quasi-mansion style in suburbia and have food brought to them by magic from somewhere else. So that's what we're dealing with. That's what planners are dealing with. The new generations of planners know more about the world than the generation of planners who wrote the zoning bylaws, which are being enforced right now.
Kelsey Wolf, you're involved in local startups, Startup Nanaimo, and you're also involved in a tech business which has just begun. You're trained in business. What are your thoughts about the whole, I guess you might say, roster of barriers that potentially exist for people that want to get into this field?
There's so many already, even for startups of any kind. It's confusing to know exactly where to go to find the resources necessary in order to start your business. But on this whole front, we're tackling a social issue. So it's much different than just creating a lifestyle business. We're trying to actually impact change as well. Startup Nanaimo, what we're trying to really do is also just encourage the entrepreneurial ecosystem of the community and the region. We want to help the long-term sustainability of Nanaimo. And in order to do so, we need to increase the number of startups. And of course, when we face such large issues such as food security, we need to combine these issues with solutions. And that's why I'm really passionate about my job at Square One as well, which is to bring in these innovative, creative entrepreneurs and help to provide them the resources that they need in order to be a successful startup and to tackle some of these issues. There's a lot of movement towards these social innovation projects, and I would love to see more people in the community coming together to collaborate on ways to really tackle this issue. Coming from a small town in Saskatchewan, I am a farm girl background. So we were small farmers. And when you see the increase of the large farmers there, it doesn't make it sustainable for the small farmer. They're not left with much. So even with Nanaimo, given the demographics of the city, it's a large retiree population. The young people in the community really need to step up to this challenge and make a difference. I myself, I'm always here for a resource to other young people who want to get involved, get connected to these people like Christopher Brown and everything that he's doing there. But I think a lot of people think that there's just a quick fix to this type of problem. The long-term sustainability of it means that we've got to plan and do incremental steps that move it forward. We need to be actionable together.
Chris, as you established the cooperative with your colleagues, did you run into some of these zoning issues and things, or did you skip over that because you were entering into a farm arrangement that had already been in existence? And the second question would be, have you met any challenges along the way that are vaguely related to land use issues?
Fortunately for us, the farm is ALR land, and we had the existing infrastructure to just get up and running. We kind of had a magic moment where everything came together. All the members of the co-op have different backgrounds and are very dynamic in bringing their skills to the table. And with volunteers and community participation, we've been very fortunate. But it would be interesting to see spaces within the city allocated for urban farming and urban gardening like that.
I wouldn't want people to think that it's harder on Vancouver Island, because Chris just pointed out that they're able to farm on agricultural land reserve land. And Vancouver Island is one of the areas which has not been affected by recent changes to the agricultural land reserve. 90% of British Columbia has been seriously affected by these changes, and we won't see the impact for years yet. but 90%, the northern part of British Columbia, is no longer, the agricultural land is no longer protected from other uses. So that's a serious problem that fortunately we don't have to face yet on Vancouver Island. And I do want to point out to people that, as Chris points out, you don't have to own the land so long as you can farm it. And the other thing is that nowhere is it written in stone that in BC you can only farm on agricultural land. The purpose of the Agricultural Land Reserve was to preserve the land, and they did that quite well.
In the last couple of moments that we have today, is there anything else that you'd like to add to this conversation? Perhaps we'll start with you, Kelsey Wolf.
Definitely. In areas like even in New York, they have over 900 food gardens and farms. And there's been a huge movement actually towards even a growing number of entrepreneurs getting a green thumb. And so it would be fantastic if Nanaimo can set that example for others. And it doesn't necessarily have to be in just becoming a farmer yourself. It can be in creating technology that assists with making urban farming possible and making sure that the costs of the capital inputs are decreased. So there's lots of different ways. It's not just a one type of entrepreneur that you can be in helping this movement forward. There's a lot of different options available and in order to do your part in all of this.
Chris Brown, is there anything else you'd like to add?
I'd just like to acknowledge our farm team for all the hard work that they've done, and our community and everyone who's been supportive at the farmers market throughout the season. And I'd like to say that what we're doing is all about building relationships. We're trying to regenerate the agricultural traditions that we were so dependent on that now have become undervalued as conventional farming and convenience of grocery stores have become the modern way of living. I'm challenging and inviting people who are becoming more aware of the global problems that local food solves many global problems, but it involves a conscious change of the way you're choosing to live. People who are coming to the farmers market, they're happy people. They're really loving coming to the market every week. And next week is the last opportunity for people to come to the Bowen Road market before it finishes for the season. And so many people are like, where am I going to get my food after the market finishes? So there certainly is a demand for people to want to be able to access local food. And that's what we're working towards right now.
Marjorie Stewart, anything you'd like to add?
Yeah, I'm going to drop everything else, Kevin, and remind you of a conversation we had a couple of years ago about potatoes, and suggest that one of the things that the city of Nanaimo needs to do is look into community root cellaring so that we have these lovely root vegetables all year round.
I'll bet you've got yours set away.
I had a word with Chris about that yesterday.
Yes. Very good. Well, thanks very much to all three of you for taking the time to join us on this lovely day, I think. And you're probably pretty busy, eh, Chris?
Yeah, we have to plant our garlic very soon, and we still have to harvest our squash. And in our lowlands, which will flood when the rains come, we still have several thousand pounds of roots that need to be harvested. And yeah, the work never ends.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
Christopher Brown is a farmer with Farmship Growers Co-op and a board member at Bowen Road Farmers Market. Kelsey Wolf is a co-founder of Startup Nanaimo and community manager at Nanaimo Square One Tech Incubator. And Marjorie Stewart is board chair at Nanaimo Food Share and a longtime commentator and columnist on food issues in the Mid-Island region. You can find Farmship Growers Cooperative on Facebook. Look for Startup Nanaimo at startupnanaimo.ca, and you can find Nanaimo Food Share online at nanaimofoodshare.ca.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Center Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.